Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
Governor Kathy Hochul gave her fifth State of the State speech this week. She highlighted her proposals to lower the cost of living and also promised to defend New Yorkers from overreach by the Trump administration. Samuel King with the New York Public News Network reports the address comes as Hochul is running for re-election.
Two of Governor Hochul's topics during her speech drew sustained standing ovations. One was her plan for child care.
And this plan will ultimately deliver universal child care for every single family in New York, full stop. Full stop. Now the work has already begun.
The other came when she discussed ICE. Her State of the State proposals include legislation allowing New Yorkers to sue in state court if federal officers violate a person's constitutional rights.
Protecting New Yorkers also means this: standing up to ICE agents who abuse their power.
That illustrated a recurring theme during her speech in the Hart Theater at the Egg in Albany, fighting back against powers that be, a tendency she says dates back to the nation's founding 250 years ago.
It's that resilience, that strength, that spirit, that willingness to fight for a better future that was born in secret meetings in the taverns of Albany in New York City, charting a path forward under the weight of an oppressive power. Sound familiar?
The other theme, affordability, as Hochul outlined proposals to reduce utility bills, lower home and auto insurance costs, and create more affordable housing.
Parents, veterans, disabled, seniors, they all need relief.
Local officials like Mayor Mike Ferguson of Fredonia in Western New York make the trip to Albany for the speech. He welcomed Hochul's proposal to streamline the environmental review process for certain housing projects.
And that's going to save buyers thousands upon thousands of dollars, not to mention the amount of time it's going to cut in the buying process.
The speech comes as Hochul embarks on a re-election campaign, with a Republican challenger, Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman, on her right, and a challenger within her own party, Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado, running on her left. Former Lieutenant Governor Bob Duffy, who is now the president and CEO of the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce, said Hochul has a balancing act between those who say she is going too far with some proposals like child care and those who say she's retreating on some issues like the environment.
And so a lot of things people may take issue with, but I think she's on spot on. And here's a difficult thing. She's in an election year. She's trying to be pulled far, far left. The state is not far left. I think the state is mostly moderate.
Meanwhile, Republicans in the legislature, like Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay of Oswego County, said they were largely skeptical of the governor's proposals and the focus on Washington.
It's hard for her probably to admit that Democrats have been one-party rule here in Albany for over a decade. So many of the big problems we have in New York, namely affordability, I think can be laid at the footsteps or the feet of the governor and her Democratic colleagues.
Now the work of turning her proposals into law begins. The governor will unveil her executive budget proposal next week. In Albany, I'm Samuel King for the New York Public News Network.
Meanwhile, representatives from the North Country found Governor Hochul's State of the State address decidedly oriented toward urban areas. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with more.
Republican Matt Simpson represents the 114th Assembly District in northeastern New York. He says he was glad to hear Governor Hochul's plan to invest in affordable housing and child care, but is concerned that she appeared to focus on the state's urban centers.
I felt that this was all targeted towards more populated communities. There was no mention of anything north of Albany whatsoever.
State Senator Dan Steck, a Republican representing the 45th District, expressed concern over the focus on New York City.
My fear and my fight will be to make sure that it doesn't come at the expense of the rest of the state, and in particular, you know, the North Country and the Senate District.
Democratic Assemblyman Michael Cashman of the 115th District wants to see more details on the governor's proposals and how they affect the state budget.
I also want to make sure that the North Country, and specifically the 115th District, is getting its fair share. We have a spectrum of needs that are interconnected.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. With the 2026 session now underway, I sat down with Yancey Roy, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday, to talk about the governor's State of the State address and one of her major proposals, more nuclear power for New York.
You know, we did a story in the fall leading up to New Year's here that took a look at the whole issue of the Climate Act in New York and the goals for New York to reach for green energy, and sort of looking at the reality that 5 years ago when it was passed, I mean, in the 5 years since it was passed, a lot has changed. I mean, you had the market effects from the pandemic. You had Trump returning to office and putting in all sorts of roadblocks against wind energy. We've got a slew of sort of really nitty-gritty power transmission issues in New York, which are sometimes don't get the big headlines that, say, a big offshore wind operation does, but that's been a real issue for New York's power system. And so you see the governor sort of openly kind of rethinking New York's climate goals. They've done a couple of things. They have signaled, New York had a law that was going to mandate going forward that buildings be all electric and not rely on gas and other things. That was going to kick in this year for buildings going forward of certain size. But there's also a lawsuit that's going on. And in the fall, one little thing that happened within that lawsuit is the Hochul administration acknowledged that it will not push forward on those goals until the lawsuit is finished, until it's completed, until it reaches some sort of resolution. And along with that, to get back to what you said about nuclear, I think the governor's administration has said, look, we're all for reaching the climate goals, but right now there is no realistic way to bring on enough wind and solar quickly enough to reach any of those goals. So we have to rethink some other options. And that's why she's pushing nuclear power. And not only is she pushing it, but now she's pushing it aggressively, because last year when she first announced it, the goal was to add 1 gigawatt of power. And now yesterday she said she wants to make it 5. Those are numbers that can be lost on me and a lot of listeners, but it's what that actually means. But what that means is a number of plants that she would like to license and get up and running. But the other thing to know about is that's a long, long process for a nuclear power plant to get up and running. If it happens, she could set the groundwork, but it's likely it would not happen while she is governor.
But it is interesting in an election year, and, you know, it's obvious she's reading the tea leaves with this nuclear thing, whether you agree with it or not. Federal government is not cooperating on the climate agenda. They don't even view climate change as a thing anymore. So you can see why she's shifting her priorities. I also wonder if it works for her electorally. In other words, I hear a lot of Republicans liking that idea. I'm wondering if she gets some independents and some purples along the way because they say, hey, this is a smart idea.
You know, the state agencies that oversee this process about a week ago released some information about how many communities have inquired and basically said, yeah, hey, we would be open to being the host to a new plant. And I want to say it was at least 8 municipalities or counties that had put in for it, and all sorts of other entities that want to get involved in it. All of them upstate, you know, Syracuse area, Lake Ontario area, predominantly sometimes out towards Lake Erie, highly Republican counties who are itching to get some sort of economic development. And to go back to where we started on this about Hochul trying to place herself as a pragmatic, moderate Democrat, well, certainly this energy push kind of keeps her in that category.
Well, one of the major things we've heard about over and over again, and this is not only in New York, it's all across the country, is affordable housing. And she addressed that in the speech this week.
She did, in a way that laid out some goals, but they weren't real concrete. Listen, to go back a few years, I think Hochul kind of learned a political lesson on the housing issue.
Yeah, she local jurisdiction.
Yeah, you're right. You're referring to a proposal from a couple of years ago where essentially in the goal that a lot of people share to have more housing and have some of that be affordable housing, she threw out an idea to jumpstart it, which in a sense would allow for some override of local zoning laws. And man, that went over like a lead balloon, especially among her suburban Democrats who support her in, say, Westchester County and on Long Island. They were calling this an extinction level event for Democrats. So she backed off of that. She changed that whole policy. Instead of making it so much of a stick approach, she put out more carrots, if you will, in terms of money and incentives to grow housing. Yesterday, she again said, look, we need housing. Everyone knows we need housing. We need to jumpstart this more. The proposals that she put out there were not as far reaching. There was a lot of stuff about incentives for first-time buyers. There was a lot of mention of incentives for prefabricated homes,
yeah,
which are less expensive and easier for first-time buyers to get into, things like that. I mean, there might be more details that we see during the budget, but right now it's proposals that not a lot of people are going to take issue with, whether they're Democrats or Republicans right now.
From that to something that is, in my opinion, very scary. We know about 3D printers. We've heard about ghost guns. And the governor's very concerned about those getting into the wrong hands.
Right. They call them homemade guns, right? And essentially they are. You have a 3D printer, which in a sense is basically you're fashioning a mold for a gun out of plastic. But they can be very deadly weapons. And the reason why law enforcement calls them ghost guns is because if you're doing these out of your kitchen or your dining room, they don't have a serial number or any other identifying things like you might see out of a real gun manufacturer. So they make them untraceable. Sometimes people put the parts together or order from different entities to put these together. So they're untraceable and they're increasing. And the cops say they're confiscating them more. There's no real handle on exactly how fast they're spreading because you're kind of starting from zero when you say how many did you confiscate this year or last year or whatever. But they're certainly proliferating. And so what she wants to do is say that people who sell 3D printers or manufacture 3D printers for sale in New York have to make sure there's not software that allows for the printing of guns in the state. Now, the first thing critics would say was, okay, you know, even if you get that here in New York, there might be issues about commerce and trade and legalities there. But also, what about someone who just prints off these in Pennsylvania or Virginia and brings them up? They realize they can't really stop that. Their idea is that if big states start to do this, New York, California, other states, then maybe at least there'll be some sort of movement, maybe in the Northeast or in other states, maybe not so much in the South, but that, you know, people will understand that there's some dangers in letting people just make guns in their own house.
We are speaking with Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday, on this week's Capital Connection. Well, we've seen a lot of anecdotal evidence that the cell phone ban in the state schools, Yancey, has seen some positives. You know, students are certainly less distracted. We've also heard anecdotally that some are getting around it by putting old phones in the pouches and getting around it. But the governor has been serious about keeping children safe, and that includes blocking messages from predators, disabling AI chatbots, location sharing, and cutting off access to online sports gaming for kids. This is a brave new world. You and I didn't have to deal with this when we were children.
You know, sometimes I kind of laugh. And I'd say I'm glad that I'm of an age where I'm not in my child rearing age anymore, and I don't have to deal with being a parent right now over and riding herd over some of these issues.
Yeah.
Unlike some of my friends and colleagues.
Yep.
But it is wild, and it is sort of, you know, how do you rein in any of this? I think that they're making an effort that will probably be widely supported in the legislature. Democrats and Republicans alike are going to say, yes, we don't want kids being targeted by predators. Yes, we don't want them being bombed by advertisers and every second of the day. The question is going to be, you know, how effective can New York be in and of itself when there's a lot of federal issues involved here, too? There's also a lot of big tech advertising and lobbying and influential people who will fight against this. So it's going to be curious to see how two things. One is if they can get legislation through New York, and then if they do, how effective will it be if you just pass only a state law without any kind of federal action?
Yeah, and see, let's just talk straight politics for a few minutes. The governor's race. What in the world? Yancey, I was pretty shocked. I think many of us were, to see Elise Stefanik, the New York congresswoman from the North Country, getting out of politics. What a shocker.
It is a surprising turnaround. I mean, it looks like Stefanik thought and maybe presumed that all the Republicans would be behind her. And when Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman decided to test the waters, as soon as he jumps in and as soon as Trump indicates that he's not going to endorse anyone, Stefanik drops out. And I think that was a surprise. And I think it's interesting because she'd had so many Republican county chairmen, Republican leaders behind her. I think some people were surprised by that.
That's Yancey Roy, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Hundreds of residents packed a meeting in Chester recently, pushing back against a proposed ICE detention facility in Orange County. The New York Public News Network's Patricia Rabaya with more.
On Monday, hundreds packed a Village of Chester board meeting, voicing opposition to a proposed ICE detention facility planned for an industrial area of the village. Days later, that concern carried over to the town of Chester town board meeting, where residents again filled the room. As town supervisor Brandon Holdridge opened the meeting and laid out his agenda for 2026, he added one final item.
And the final one that I'll add to my agenda is to keep ICE out of the town of Chester.
Holdridge went on to cite deaths in ICE custody and recent violent incidents involving ICE agents elsewhere in the country, saying he did not want Chester to face those risks.
32 people died in ICE custody in 2025. An ICE officer pled guilty to sexual abuse of a detainee in Louisiana at the end of 2025. Renee Good was shot and killed by an ICE agent on January 7th, 2026. Two people were shot and wounded by an ICE agent on January 8th in Portland, Oregon. I don't want any of that happening here in Chester.
Many residents spoke against the ICE facility finding a home in the Village of Chester. Among the speakers was civil rights attorney Michael Sussman, who said an ICE facility would undermine decades of progress in a community that has become increasingly diverse.
This community has grown remarkably. It's diversified in every manner. Its leadership has diversified. And to put an ICE facility in the middle of this community, which is a dignified community, tri-ethnic community, representing people of all faiths in an equitable manner, in my view, would be a tremendous slap in the face of the progress we've made.
Sussman warned that placing a detention center in Chester would introduce what he called an infrastructure of fear into a community built on inclusion.
I think it would be tragic for the infrastructure of fear and hate to be spread one iota in our community. Thank you.
Orange County Executive Stephen Newhouse says he plans to formally oppose any effort to convert the former warehouse into an ICE detention center.
Regardless of where you stand on the issue of what's going on in the country with immigration, we all know that what's happening in the Midwest is just a disaster. And we don't want that here. Nobody wants it. It's not good for anything for Orange County as far as my emergency management team, law enforcement. I just don't want to get... I don't want to be dealing with that, and I don't think you do either. It's just, to me, just not very well thought out and not something we want to do. I understand why they want to be in Orange County. We have Stewart Airport. If they round up individuals and put them on the planes and send them back to where they come from, I get what they're trying to do. But, again, hasn't been brought up to us with a plan, and everyone has been rolled out, has been completely... catastrophic for the local community. So the last thing we want to do is do that.
Newhouse, a Republican, said the county has not been notified by the Department of Homeland Security about such a proposal and emphasized that there is no local support for it. I'm Patricio Robayo for the New York Public News Network.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Wake boats, which create massive waves that people can surf or ski, have become increasingly common in recent years. Now, a coalition of environmental research and advocacy groups are pushing for municipalities throughout the Adirondacks to limit the way these boats are used. Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shella-Levine with more.
A range of organizations, including the Adirondack Center for Loon Conservation, Paul Smith College's Adirondack Watershed Institute, and Protect the Adirondacks, have been pushing for more stringent local laws to restrict the use of wake boats on lakes in the Adirondack Park. Executive Director of the Adirondack Lakes Alliance, Scott Ireland, led a presentation Wednesday outlining the group's findings and proposed legislation.
It is one of the fastest growing segments of recreational boating. The numbers we've seen is that it's growing by about 20% a year. It's important to note that wake boats are not boats that generate wakes. Every boat does.
Wake boats use massive ballasts filled with additional water in combination with relatively slower speeds to create large waves. The group says some research suggests the energy created by these boats can increase the rate of shore erosion. The advocates say at shallower depths, wake boats also run the risk of stirring up soil in lake beds.
One of the big concerns is stirring up nutrients that are sitting in the bottom sediment. And by doing so, you're increasing this phosphorus nutrient into the water column, which, given that we've had some warm summers and low drought conditions over the last couple of years, this increases the opportunity for harmful algal blooms to form.
Wake boats also pose a risk to loons, a protected bird species found throughout the park, and their nests. While loon populations have been on the rise, the biggest threat to their population is nest floods, which wake boats could exacerbate. Boats are required to be cleaned prior to entering many lakes in the Adirondacks to prevent the spread of invasive species. Sarah Kelly, a research scientist with Paul Smith College's Adirondack Watershed Institute, says it's nearly impossible to completely wash a wake boat's ballasts.
Most decontamination stations within Adirondack Park don't have a water supply that is on demand, and so they are using water storage tanks, and those have a limited volume. And basically what our decontamination stewardship program leader has told us is that you could essentially decontaminate one wake boat or, you know, several motor boats.
In 2024, Vermont adopted wakeboat regulations that limited use to areas 500 feet from shore and to places at least 20 feet deep on lakes that are at least 50 acres in size. Laura DeLugalecki is with Vermont's Department of Environmental Conservation. She says the department is already looking to expand those regulations.
We would like to have, we're proposing a 500-foot offset between wake sports and other users, so 500 feet between generating that large wave and other users. The existing default safety offset in Vermont is 200 feet, and so we feel that the 500 feet is appropriate for wake sports. We also want to include a 500-foot offset from active loon nesting sites. In Vermont, there's already an existing rule that you have to be 300 feet.
As is, the New York Coalition is not pushing for statewide regulations. Rather, they have created a model town ordinance that would limit the use of wakeboats to parts of lakes that are at least 1,000 feet from shore and 30 feet deep on lakes that are larger than 60 acres. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Aaron Shello-Levine.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime. WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2603. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.